This is Driven by Data, the podcast.
Welcome back to another season of Driven by Data, the podcast. Powered by Orbition Group and hosted by me, Kyle Winterbottom. We are delighted to bring you season four of Driven by Data, the podcast, and our aim remains exactly the same: to bring you some of the most respected and recognized thought leadership figures from the world of data analytics to share their knowledge, ideas, use cases, and insights across how they've tackled some of the industry's most trending topics and challenges. All that's left to say is sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode. Welcome to Driven by Data, the podcast, season four. Today, I'm delighted to be joined by Caroline Zimmerman, who is the Director of Data Products and Strategy at Profusion. So, Caroline, thank you very much for joining us.
It's my pleasure, Kyle.
Caroline, someone I know very well, so very much looking forward to this. But where we always start, as you know, Caroline, from being an avid listener, is, you know, we always ask our guests to give themselves a brief intro into their background and, I guess, journey to date up until this point in time, if you'd be so kind.
Sure. So I started out as a literary agent, a little uncommon, I guess, as a starting point for a data career, and studied English Lit. And at some point down that path, realized that the thing I cared more about than books was women in leadership, and that I wanted to go get an MBA to overcome my fear of math and numbers and be on the business side of media rather than the content development side of media. And in that MBA, actually just before starting it, I took a little bit of time off and did a stint, a startup that was, you know, that was started by MIT engineers who were doing social media analytics for books. And I was like, oh, this data thing is cool. So in the MBA, I focused, like, I did all the electives that I could on data and statistics, and then ended up joining a program with a big German international media conglomerate, where they sort of let you do whatever you wanted for a year and a half. And I did data projects. And the idea was, you know, go to Penguin Random House or like Fremantle Media or whatever. And I did all of mine on data, right? They were these 3 to 6 month projects. And the final project was a data strategy piece for BMG, which is the fourth biggest music company. And that project resulted in me asking if I wanted to join as their first ever like data leader to start the data function there. And that was brilliant. And I guess all this time I just self-trained. You know, I did Coursera's like data science 10 course and online learning. So it's all self-taught, you know, R, Tableau, all that coding data biz stuff is self-taught. Yeah. And led the data function at BMG for a number of years and then moved into consultancy where I am now.
Nice. Perfect. Very, very interesting journey. So what I love about this podcast, you know, when I speak to people, what I'm finding more and more conversations I have, it's like, you know, oh, I started as a librarian or started as a, you know, I'm like, wow. And you're like, how have you ended up here? But yeah, fascinating. So for anyone that isn't familiar then, give us a bit of information and insight into Profusion, who you are, what you do, who you do it for, etc.
Sure. So Profusion is a data consultancy. And we do everything from data strategy to implementation, and that could be BI and analytics, data science, data engineering. And it's for a range of clients, really. So we'll do like cloud migrations for big government clients or setting up management reporting and basic data infrastructure for private equity-backed SMEs or, you know, looking at sales and marketing functions in big corporates and how data can help them improve their ROI. So it's really a range.
Nice. Okay. Very good. And I guess your role there just gives a bit of insight into the part of the puzzle that you fix or play or challenge.
Well, I'm there for the strategy piece. So what are we actually going to work on? But then also the data product and implementation piece, right? And I think of myself as I just need to make sure that what we do adds value. And I'm the one looking after that from the beginning when we're doing the strategy all the way through to the end data product, just making sure that someone is babysitting the portfolio and making sure that it is achieving the desired or expected benefits.
Yeah, makes sense. The data product space is utterly fascinating to me, and kind of the journey that's gone on now. And I know you're part of this little group of people in the industry that's kind of, raising the flag and awareness of data products and what it is and what it isn't. And obviously that's not what this episode is about. I guess what this episode is all about is obviously the research that you've been doing around private equity and how private equity organizations and I guess their portfolio companies are leveraging data analytics to fuel growth. I guess it'd be a great starting point to set the scene a little bit and I guess understand what the catalyst was for conducting that research in terms of, the outputs of that.
Yeah. So first of all, it has been a blast. I highly recommend doing academic research every 3 or 4 years in one's career. It is so refreshing to just take time out of the everyday and go talk to really interesting people about their jobs. I did it once before. I'm doing this research with my old professor from business school. So the business school is called INSEAD, and he is a professor of technology management and decision sciences there. He's like a professor who changed my life. And this is the second time he and I have teamed up on research. And the impetus for it is that we were doing, with my Perfusion hat on, we were doing more and more work with private equity-backed businesses and interacting both with the PE firm and the portfolio company. And they're, everyone at the time, and I guess people still are, but at the time it was just so explosive as a topic, like value with data. How do you deliver value? Value, 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 value. And I think that private equity has a very specific definition of value and a very specific way of measuring it and expecting returns from their investments that meant that there was a lot of wisdom in there for the rest of the data community. And so that was really the inspiration was, I think that PE has a lot to teach everyone else out there around how you invest in data in a way that delivers meaningful value.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think there's still quite a lot of debate about the term value in quotation marks up on the screen here
on this podcast.
I've probably been the main contributor to that debate, and I think, to be honest with you, it's kind of feeling a little bit worn now in certain instances. But I guess the flip side of that argument is also that I know and understand better than most the impact it has on organizations and the people within those organizations and careers and what it does to the job market and a whole, all of the ripple effect that the value conversation or the lack of value conversation has on the wider industry, which is why I think we end up just circling back to it constantly. But as we all know, value is in the eye of the beholder, right? And I think that's what makes the whole debate very, very challenging. I guess to kick us off then, I guess what throughout that research, and I know there's, it's multifaceted, there's a lot that's been uncovered throughout it. What have been the major differences, if you were just to think about, top line headlines between, how PE firms operate or PE backed firms operate in comparison to the rest of the corporate world as we know it through our events, the conversations that are happening, etc.?
Yeah. I mean, I think one of them is the definition of value. In private equity, it is not ambiguous. Value means enterprise value, which means your EBITDA profit times your industry multiple. That is value. And whatever you do in data needs to be contributing to that. And yes, I think that's one thing. The definition of value is clearer. But on the other hand, they don't, the interesting thing about private equity is that they're preparing for an exit on a 3 to 5 year, sometimes 7 year, sometimes 2 year, right? But roughly time horizon. And that is both enough time to do meaningful things, to make meaningful investments where you're not just looking quarter to quarter. And you also have the freedom to do it because they own you, right? Or they own a majority stake in you, maybe a minority stake, right? But especially if it's a majority stake, that has a lot of power. If they're like, yeah, go for it, let's do this, there's a big enough time horizon that you can get stuff done, but it's not so long that then you start twiddling your thumbs. So there's urgency, but still long-term vision. And so I think that, you know, and basically what you have is 2 years in that time window to do interesting things with data, right? And that's a great time horizon. So I think that's part of it. And then another one of the big differences is like the profiles of these data leaders. They're not really data leaders. They are digital leaders with a data specialism, and they're just a lot more well-rounded for the most part than like an average data leader. They often have had P&L responsibilities in digital businesses, or were maybe a chief marketing officer, but just like a very technically savvy chief marketing officer. They just, and they're much more financially literate, I think, than an average data leader. So their financial and just general business literacy is amazing. And their ability to communicate with the C-suite, that level of like business language about what is going to make you more money as a business and what is going to increase your valuation and what is going to make people money. You know, at the end of the day, they're just really fluent in that.
I knew this was going to happen, Caroline, as you spoke, but there's about a gazillion questions.
Yeah, go. I could come off on this, so you need to interrupt me.
No, that's fine. I guess a couple of things that I was going to ask / suggest. Do you think that the fact that with PE firms, as you said, there is a plan, there is a strategy, it's, you know, invest 3 to 5 years, we're out. So there's a direction of travel that everyone gets behind. And I think that's possibly in a data analytics team or organization within a corporate business, that's kind of not the case. So do you think that helps kind of almost hone in the definition of here's the start point, here's the end point, go?
I think you nailed it. That's the difference. That is the difference. It's the complete alignment around here's our growth plan, here's how we're going to do it. And you said it. I think you nailed it. It's that go, you know, and there's a lot of power and pressure, I would say, behind executing that plan that I just not seen the same. Even in like, you know, big publicly traded corporates where there's still quarterly earnings reports, it's just, there's just a different level of focus that sometimes results in just like a different level of pressure as well to deliver results in that like 2-3 year timeframe.
And I guess kind of singularly focused as well in that really there's only a handful of metrics that result in that exit happening, right? You know, so everything is geared around that. Whereas, and I'm not suggesting that things like customer experience are important, but in a big corporate business, you get data teams that are focused on things like, you know, improving customer, you know, efficiency or customer experience. And whilst that's great and obviously is very important for brand recognition and repeat business and all of that type of good stuff, I guess as far as measuring progress goes, PE firms are quite single, on a single track.
Totally.
Focus.
You know, if it doesn't make money, they're just not going to do it, you know? But what I do, so here's one thing. This was like my favorite thing from the study so far, which is that they do see value in BI, but it's not traditional BI. And actually, the greatest value is probably in that. And that's surprising, right? Because that doesn't make you money. It's not ROI measurable, which is what everyone's obsessed with. And they absolutely invest in that stuff. But really, where the most attention is in PE that we have seen in this research is around what they call growth modeling, which is different than just like, let's track a bunch of metrics and make a bunch of dashboards that no one uses, right? It's very distinct from that. It is much more around what are my growth drivers, you know, in terms of revenue. Let me look at my customer, my funnel, you know, and where drop off points on the revenue side and what is the cost associated with acquiring that customer, you know, and retaining that customer and things like that. And it's really around getting a deep grasp of unit economics and being able to understand like what are those high level KPIs that really help me understand what the mechanics of my business are for making money. And because what that allows you to do is have, you know, your exec team then becomes much more evidence-based in their decisions, of course. But here is the, and it allows you to size opportunities as well, right? And say, okay, for our growth initiatives, we're planning on fixing this piece of the funnel. Okay, well, like what is the, it actually allows you to play out the revenue, you know, it also allows you to calculate the ROI of different opportunities, not data initiatives, any initiative. And that's extremely powerful, right? Because you can make investment decisions with a lot more quantitative backup than if you're doing the finger in the air. But here's the kicker, is the reason this adds value and is measurable in some sense is because it takes so much pain out of the exit process. And it means that you're much more likely to have more potential interested buyers and a more competitive sales process because you can back up your growth story. You are saying, here's the evidence. I'm not just telling you that we're going to acquire a bunch of new customers. Look at what the evidence points to. And so this isn't, you're able to answer the tough questions essentially around your business. And it means that you have much greater control when, you know, the market falls or a certain customer segment, you know, you just understand your own levers so much with so much more fluency, and you understand how to activate different pieces of your business in response to those market conditions. And that is worth its weight in gold, not just to make the right investment decisions throughout that holding period, but to exit successfully with a bunch of people interested and a bunch of people bidding because you're backing up your growth story. And that's different, right? Because the growth model matters because it allows you to exit. It's not just like a nice to have, you know? And yeah, and that I think is fundamentally different than when you can, when you're not looking to exit.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. So it's not that they don't do BI, again, in quotation marks. It's just their concept of what intelligence they require to run their business is all about growth towards the metrics that matter for that exit. Yeah,
exactly.
Makes perfect sense. Have you seen, and this is more out of curiosity than anything else, I guess, you know, one of the debates that we often get into in the industry is about, you know, the background that someone's come from and, you know, the fact that maybe the data analytics industry isn't as, you know, business savvy or might lack some acumen in that space from a commercial perspective, hence why we get into this whole value and ROI debate, right, around and around we go. But I guess for PE-backed firms, has it kind of become apparent, or not as the case may be, that, you know, it's almost that the PE companies are doing that part of the job for the organizations as far as data goes in terms of helping them do that bit?
Yes. So the way that it is structured, and I think you know this, but just for listeners, right, is that private equity will have an investment team, but then also a value creation team. And these are small teams, right? Like they're very lean. And value creation teams might include like a former chief marketing officer and a former chief revenue officer and, you know, just and often data and digital people who are going to help put together, but also execute that value creation plan that was put together when they first decided to bid and then acquire the company. And the data, and often the digital and data person is the same person because these are quite lean teams. In bigger firms, they might have more specialization, but they will act as an advisor to the portfolio company. And they'll kind of be the data strategist, right? Digital and data strategist often together, which again is interesting because they'll think about data in terms of digital products and experience and things like that, right? Rather than data in isolation, right? But yeah, it's really... they're going to be acting as almost a consultant in a way, and then bringing in the right resources, the right skill sets, often through a consultancy like ours, right? To execute, to help execute on that.
Yeah, no, it's really interesting. I mean, we've been having a lot more conversations and doing quite a bit of work in the private equity space, and it's exactly that model that you've just described, right? You know, we'll normally be speaking to a value creation team. They'll have someone that's acting as consultant / advisor across the portfolio, helping them, okay, how do we go from A to B? Do we need to, you know, are we creating a, sometimes there might be a central resource within the PE firm that they almost consult to the portfolio, or other times they'll help the portfolio to build their own small capabilities in pockets as needed. But yeah, it's been very interesting. I guess, do the findings then from the research, as it looked at it through the lens of the PE firm itself versus their portfolio company in terms of differences around how PE firms are using data?
So it's much more on the portfolio company side. We have not researched the internal facing, you know. So some companies have pretty extensive data functions and teams that are looking to be more data-driven in their own, you know, how do we target companies to buy and then use data more effectively in the diligence process, for example. And then also in terms of reporting back on the performance of their portfolio companies back to their investors, which, you know, are usually institutional institutional investors like pension funds or sovereign wealth funds or things like that. You know, what I would say, to go back to your question about, you know, what are the differences? The other one is, like, everyone in these value creation teams that is like a data specialist, they're actually like very technical, often like quite advanced technically, and also very strategic. They're like total unicorns often, you know, in their ability to go really deep in terms of like data science modeling and data engineering, but then being able to, you know, like zoom right out into the like CEO conversation. And they're very, yeah, they just operate on lots of different levels. And I heard the phrase strategic doer to describe that. And I think that's great. That's like definitely what I want to be with my life. I'm like, yes, hashtag goals, strategic doer. I've decided from this research, Kyle, that my career aspiration is to be the data whisperer to CEOs. And to be able to prototype, right? To be able to prototype at that high, you know, executive decision-making level. But yeah, to be able to technically prototype and iterate before you kind of send it off to an a scaling team, right? But they're also, they all have such an immediate, profound grasp that they are there to enable growth, not build capabilities. And it's always, like, whatever they do is always associated to a growth initiative, even when it's that growth modeling piece, right? Because ultimately it's about assessing what we should invest in and what we shouldn't, right? It's almost the piece before you decide where to invest, I guess. But yeah, there's just such a growth mindset, you know? And I think you have probably seen this in your work, but the market has exploded in PE for these value creation folks. Exploded, like, in the last 2-3 years, the comp and the amount of roles being hired has just ballooned. And one of the findings is, yeah, just one of the things that we've seen in the research, right, is that there's kind of, in private equity, the investment team is like first class citizens and the value creation team are second class citizens. And the way that that distinction is made is who gets equity in the fund. And it's called carried interest, right? So who gets carried interest and how much you get, that's how hierarchy is determined in PE. And these digital and data people are getting carry now, whereas 3 years ago they weren't, right? So that's a real indication. And like, maybe to give you some context on that, up until 3 years ago, when the economy was still like, woo, low interest rates, all that, it was a lot easier to make money. It was, you know, all you need, you know, you like, with financial engineering and some operational improvements and cost takeouts, the PE company, just doing that alone, you could really boost the valuation and have a very profitable exit. But in a world of much higher interest rates and also more competition, there are just more PE firms around than before. Value creation is where you're going to have your edge. Mm. And so data is actually a place of like increasing investments in private equity, whereas you see a lot of corporates divesting or reducing their investment in these functions, they're like upping it because they are seeing it as the differentiator. It's your edge. It's your edge.
Yeah. I guess in regards to that in of itself, which, because I find that absolutely fascinating, right? As you said, we've seen a lot of, you know, noticeable brands start to shrink, reduce, even cut in some instances, you know, their chief data office or you know, a lot of the capability. Whereas obviously in PE, it's growing. And I can't help but draw the link back to, because there's a end goal that's easy to measure and manage against, right? But I guess as the Does the cap size play a part in this conversation somewhere in terms of the, you know, the cap size of the PE firm versus and the size of the businesses they're investing in, and I guess how all of that pieces together in terms of the size and the scale of the capability they need to build?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, look, there were a couple of smaller firms that aren't doing this, but all the big firms are, essentially, and mid-market as well. I think it's more how big rather than if at this point. I mean, there's a lot, you know, a very, there's a small, I think there's a small contingent that is maybe deciding like, no, we don't really want to do that. We don't really see value there. We're unsure, blah, blah, blah. But, you know, so I was saying earlier about growth modeling, right? Like that's one pocket. The other pocket of investment in PE, and this is what we found again in the research, is there are two main ways that they're using data to deliver value. One of them is commercial team enablement. And this is the ROI positive stuff, right? Like growth modeling does have an impact, but it's less measurable because you can't A/B test an exit. But you can A/B test commercial team enablement and pricing. Those were the two things. So commercial team enablement means helping your sales team curate their to-do list using data. So who should you be going after? How do you prioritize who you're contacting every day? Like your call list, your contact list. And the other one is marketing ROI, right? Like where marketing spend effectiveness. So attribution modeling, essentially, right? Like how can I more effectively spend my marketing budget? And yeah, and pricing was the other big bucket. So commercial team enablement and pricing are the two most ROI, consistently ROI positive things that PE firms are encouraging their portfolio companies to invest in. And maybe just a word on the commercial team enablement. There's a real, this was a real pattern in the research, was do I have a deep understanding of the characteristics and behaviors of my most valuable customers? And how do I tweak my marketing spend and strategy and messaging to go after those folks once I have that understanding? And how do I make sure that I am pushing those folks through the funnel effectively? And that came up over and over again as like the thing, you know, along with pricing. And I just thought that was super interesting. We actually do a lot of that stuff at Perfusion. And, you know, somebody that we spoke to in the research said, you know, it's all about figuring out what is that million-dollar question that you want to ask a prospect at the very beginning of your journey with you to help you understand what their predicted customer lifetime value is so that you can figure out how much you want to invest to convert them and like retain them. And it's just brilliant. It's really simple, right? It's really quite simple. Like, who are my most valuable customers? How do I go after those people more? Like, go all in and then make sure I'm not letting them drop out.
Yep.
Okay, right?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, and I think, you know, if you think back to all of the debates that we have in this industry, fundamentally, it all comes down to how do we help the business that we work for to improve the performance of what it does? Right. I think that's the thing with PE is fundamentally that's all it's there for, right? And they've got a vested interest in making that happen, because if they don't, then guess what? They're not selling out and they've just invested a lot of time and money, which makes sense. Was there any differences out of interest in terms of, I guess, the industry sector of the portfolio companies or the types of products or, you know, digital natives versus corp versus kind of more legacy type organizations?
Yeah. They're more legacy, right? Like PE tends to invest in, I mean, it really depends on the fund, but I would say in general, it's a bit more, it tends a bit more towards legacy than digital native, just because they tend, plenty of exceptions, but tend to be investing in more, yeah, just more mature, excuse me, businesses. And, but they also take giant companies private. You know, like they might just buy out a public company and take it private again, right? So I think it really depends. I would say overall, the people that we spoke to, which was, I think we spoke to about 35 of these digital and data value creation folks across all kinds of funds, big, large, small, across not so much Asia, but across US and Europe. And the average maturity, data maturity and digital maturity of these businesses is pretty low. And PE doesn't necessarily love retail. So, which is one of the most, if not the most data rich, you know, environment. So tends to be lower data maturity in general, I think.
Why does it not like retail?
I don't totally know. But I mean, I assume it's much less stable revenue than annual recurring revenue of like a software, you know, a SaaS company. It's maybe more fickle and low margin.
Yeah.
So that would be my guess, but I'm not actually a PE expert, so I don't.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, I was just interested to know if, you know, the research had suggested anything out of the other side of that. Talk to me about culture, because I think obviously culture is a massive topic in our industry more broadly. I think there's an added level of complexity, I guess, and maybe a different dynamic around the culture of arguably the PE firm itself and how that integrates and operates with the portfolio companies that it serves.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this was one of the findings was culture is the main barrier to overcome, just like everywhere else. So in that, it was the same. That was the challenges are very similar. I think that there was a lot that was different on like the approach side and how you define value and perhaps the kinds of initiatives that they're focusing on. But in terms of what comes up as a challenge, it was people. Do you know, on my first day of business school, our organizational behavior professor, which for anyone who doesn't know is, you know, the psychology of work, I guess you'd call it. Our organizational behavior professor looked out onto the classroom and said, I know that you think that your most important subjects are finance and, you know, financial markets and M&A and microeconomics. But at the end of the day, this is the only class that matters. And I guess it's true in PE as well. You know, like it's not cultural barriers. It's the complications of working with people. You know? And one of the things that came up a lot was around, so this was, there was a real difference in firms that specialize in a sector. So only do SaaS investments, for example, and those who are much more diversified. And with those who are operating in a single sector, they tend to be a lot more directive in general and more directive with data as well. So they're like, look, here's the playbook. You all need to get onto Salesforce. You all need to record your customer data in this way. You're going to report it back to us in this way. Here's how you organize your tiers of customers. Go do it. This is what you're doing. It's directive, but also can fill someone with confidence because they've done it a million times before. Where there is that more of that culture piece really is around when you haven't done it before. It's the first time that you've owned, I don't know, like electronic parts manufacturing firm. And you're trying to evaluate, you know, what the opportunity is for data there to add value. And it's not necessarily, it's not a playbook, right? So there's more of a conversation to be had.
Slightly more consultative, I guess, because it needs to be a bit more bespoke and tailored to that specific organization, sector, people, maturity.
Yeah. And what I would say was there was a huge long tail of just like use cases and data products and applications that have added value. One of my favorite stories from the research was of a, so again, right, they're like digital and data folks. So they identified an opportunity. It was for a like luxury transportation company, right? And on their outbound trips, they were at full capacity, but on the return trips, coming back pretty much empty. And so they created an Uber-like service for that capacity, which included a lot of very data-intensive work, which was around like demand forecasting and revenue forecasting and then, you know, just all of that. But then there was a whole digital product that they needed to build around that they then needed to market. And, you know, and it I think not only did it affect profit, it actually changed the multiple because then you're fundamentally repositioning the company compared to its competitors. And that was another interesting finding is data tends to affect profit. It's not often going to affect the multiple unless you're doing something like truly innovative. And in that case, it's going to be probably a digital innovation that has a data element. It's not going to be like, it's not going to be a model on its own. You know, there needs to be a product experience built around that. Or you need to, I know this is one of your favorite topics, monetize data assets. That can also change your multiple, because they then might, you know, they might be able to sell that to existing customers on a subscription basis. And then not only have you increased profit, you've changed the multiple. And then all of a sudden you're at a 10x from when you bought it.
Mm, yeah, that's really interesting. I guess in terms of the day-to-day of these portfolio companies, and I completely appreciate this will be very subjective given maturity, sector, size of business, etc. But I guess the actual activities that are going on within them, you know, I don't know if you look around the corporate world that isn't PE backed, it's, you know, we're building platforms, we're building dashboards, we're building models, and, you know, here we are again, back at that conversation. Why? Right? Does that look different in PE-backed firms? I know you talked before about there's more direction from certain funds because they've been there, they've done that, and they can kind of give them the playbook of what's worked. But I guess, you know, I think there's often in our industry quite a lot of work that happens because it's just like, well, we're kind of going on this journey. We'll need a platform anyway. Let's build it, and then we can figure out how it works. But I guess based on the conversation thus far, it kind of feels like probably not so much, because it needs to be tied to something very tangible, which moves the needle of that end goal metric.
Totally. And that never happens in PE. It just does not happen.
Who makes those decisions, out of interest?
I mean, I guess the PE firm, but that came up over and over again. Like, we do not do data lakes, and we do not just build, like, you know, one of the people we interviewed talked about, we don't make horizontal investments in data infrastructure in PE. We understand what a business vertical is and then build a piece of the horizontal. So you want to have an end goal in mind so that whatever you're doing doesn't incur tech debt, right? Like, you want it to scale. So you do want to future-proof it a bit. And there's a balance to find there. And I don't think necessarily PE or anyone else has figured that exactly that out, right? Because you do need things to scale and to future-proof them. And sometimes you need to build more than the exact slice in order, you know, the exact vertical slice. But it's a principle to follow, which is you don't build horizontally for data infrastructure. You build vertically in service of a growth lever or growth modeling. But again, with growth modeling, it's not 35 KPIs. You know, it's like, what are the operational metrics that really matter for us to fundamentally have control of our business? And somebody said, the way that I evaluate that, like, value to me, is increasing the quality of conversations at the board level. Am I getting through that the board to be having much more intelligent strategic conversations? So yeah, it's whatever data architecture and infrastructure enables those things. Never just, oh, wouldn't it be nice to put all our data in one place and see what we can do with it?
Yeah, 100%. No, I mean, I think, as you said, there's a balance to be struck there, because I guess you, and, you know, you've been privy to a lot of these conversations too, but, you know, even on this podcast, the amount of times people that have been very successful will underpin part of that success to building things that are scalable and reusable, so things that aren't being built in silos. But equally, we're probably at the other end of that extreme spectrum, where often things that are being built for the sake of being built, because they kind of don't know what else to do, but know they should be doing something, right? Or at least perceived to be doing something. So,
I mean, this is a question for you, Kyle. Do you think people are still doing that a lot? Because I think you can rarely get away with that, even in regular corporates now, but I could be wrong.
So definitely not as much, I think, you know, and look, I think that's partly because there's more noise made about this as a topic now. And, you know, probably a lot of businesses that have gone through that experience and can kind of teach and give advice to others. But, you know, if you think about 5 years ago, when most organizations were just in the infancy of their data journey, obviously, yeah, they'd been doing something with data for many years, but actually creating some kind of central function that served the business or the enterprise, you know, often they, that they were still very immature in that sense. And I think, you know, a lot of hype and fear of missing out pushed a lot of businesses to be doing something. I mean, like data science was a prime example. I mean, I can't count on two hands the number of meetings I sat in with, you know, business leaders who were saying, right, we're going to build a data science team. And I was kind of like, why would you do that? And it's just because that was the buzzword at the time. You know, so I think often decisions are made because it's almost like, well, if we don't do anything and our competitors do something, then we're going to be in trouble. So let's at least get going on the journey and then we can figure it out. And, you know, before you know it, you're 3 to 5 years in, X amount of hundreds of millions of pounds, dollars down. And then you're back at the question, where's the value, right?
That's so, like where a lot of AI projects are going today. But yeah.
I think so. Yeah. So I guess, broadly speaking, I know there's a massive personal element to this for you in terms of doing the research, but obviously I know from a professional standpoint, it's been, you know, very enlightening and interesting for you. Why do you think the data analytics community more broadly should care about, you know, what you found, I guess?
Yeah, because I think that they are two steps ahead as an industry in terms of how you communicate and measure value and how you work with the C-suite. And I think that there's a lot to be learned there for how data leaders or aspiring data leaders can just work on their executive polish in a way. And also just the, you know, there is value in growth modeling. You know, even if you don't have an exit, like ultimately, I guess I also just want to give confidence to people that empowering better decisions is probably still the most valuable thing we do, even though that has been unappreciated in a way. Or like, you know, it's like ROI, ROI, ROI. Actually, no. Yes, ROI. But probably the most important thing we can do is to use data to get your board to be having way better conversations about investments and the strategic direction of the company. So to give people confidence that that is valuable, as long as you have the right level of executive polish and you are understanding that like the success metric is enabling better conversations at the board level, right? And then, yeah, if you're not doing it already, figure out your pricing and your commercial team enablement stuff, because that is ROI producing. And if you don't know the behaviors and characteristics of your best customers, go figure that out and make sure you're moving them through the funnel. You know, like those are pretty, even if I put my data leadership hat on, I wish I'd had that playbook. Those three things: growth modeling, who are your best customers, how are you moving them through the funnel, and pricing. Like that's a powerful trio right there, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. So hopefully I guess the goal is to give people some inspiration on what value means.
Yeah. It's interesting, right? Because I think if we take a step back and think very logically about all of this stuff, right? As you said, the driver really should be about helping businesses and business leaders to make more informed decisions, which the byproduct of that should be ROI and better business performance, right? Yeah. Which should negate all of this. And providing you are doing the right activities in terms of understanding what the drivers are of getting to that outcome that you want, then the improved decisions pointed in the right direction should just get you to that end result anyway. But I guess obviously we're not at that place for a kind of, you know, myriad of different reasons. But yeah, I think there's obviously a lot to be learned from the commerciality of how these digital and data folk within value creation teams, within PE firms, obviously think and operate. I think it's really powerful stuff. Out of interest, the people themselves, like, just talk to me a little bit about that, because I'm sure there'll be people listening to this podcast now thinking,
what? Who are these people?
Yeah. who are they, and how do I get those jobs?
Let me tell you, they make a lot more money than you. Like 3 or 4 times more money than you probably do. I mean, I'll say this because it is in the paper, but, you know, average comp for these types of roles was like 250K with no carry 3 years ago, and it's now 450K with carry.
So what about kind of like seniority and background? Obviously,
So these are for the most senior role, right? The chief digital officer, head of data, or they're like What I would say is they are not standard. They're often not called a head of data. So they might be like a managing director, for example. That was probably the most common, or like a value creation partner, or, you know, and I'm sure that everyone we talked to was not at that, you know, at that salary level. It's just, it shows the evolution of the market though, right? And who are these people? I mean, I can't name names. Obviously.
Yeah, no, we don't want you to name names. I'm referring to the persona, like the background. Have they come from, you know, have they come from managing a data team in a corporate, or have they come up the private equity ladder? You know, do they have a background in data?
Yeah, it really depends. It really depends. So there's a mix. Some of them are former strategy consultants at like Bain, BCG, McKinsey, who had a digital and or data element to their work. But I'd say more often they were very senior business leaders in digital and data heavy rich businesses. So like one of them was very senior at a dating app. And another one was very senior in retail. And another one was super senior, like I think maybe the managing director of like a car rental, a digital car rental company. So they've often had P&L responsibilities in digital businesses and or have a deep technical specialty as well. But it's really a mix. It's really quite varied. And usually, yeah, they were in industry for years and then got poached into PE. And I'd say they often have quite nice brands on their resume, you know, whether from consultancy or like digital native businesses and things like that. They're generally quite impressive, I would say.
That makes sense. The reason I ask is kind of twofold, really. Obviously, first of all, you've got, I mean, at that type of comp level, right, especially here in the UK, you know, that's kind of on par with CDAOs from large firms and of partners in consulting firms, right? So it gives us an idea of the type of person. But equally, the other side is that you're getting a lot of kind of chief data officers now looking at, well, what comes next for me? And, you know, a lot of them are starting to look at trying to do kind of NED or board advisory work. And I know that the PE thing is kind of something bubbling away that they're all keeping their eye on, thinking that could be really interesting, actually. And I know a few, you know, that we've helped set up some conversations with and for. So I think, yeah, you know, I don't think it'll be long before we'll start to see more of the, you know, general, again, in quotation marks, data analytics community stuff.
I think you're totally right. That way. I think you're absolutely right. But again, it will be those with big roles often, right? Because they are looking, again, for that exec presence, the ability to communicate with the C-suite in business terms super effectively. Yeah, as well as then, you know, what's this data thing all about? Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. That makes perfect sense. Cool. Well, look, Caroline, we could talk forever and a day about this, but I think it's, yeah, really fascinating. Thank you so much for giving up your time. I guess, last question then, where can we find the research? Like, when's it out? When's it available? Is there anything else going on around this topic?
Yeah, thank you for asking, Kyle. So we're publishing, it will be an INSEAD working paper, published May 2nd, and we're having a launch event, which Kyle, you're, of course, you know, cordially invited to, and I hope you join us. And anyone who would like to come, we do have limited space, but if anyone wants to reach out to me directly on LinkedIn, I can certainly see, you know, what we can do.
Interesting. Very good. All right. Well, when we publish this, we'll make sure that the relevant links are published, so that people can get access to you and or to any links they need to try and register if there's still space at that point in time. Excellent. Yeah. Well, Caroline, thank you so much for giving up your time. It's been a pleasure to speak with you as always, and look forward to seeing you very soon.
Thank you so much for having me, Kyle. It's been great.
That's it for this episode of Driven by Data, the podcast. I hope you enjoyed it. I'll be back next week speaking with another thought leader from the world of data and analytics. Until then, please follow Orbition Group on social media if you've not already done so, where you'll be able to subscribe and therefore be made aware of the podcasts as they arrive. And please share, like, and leave reviews so that more people from our industry get to hear and benefit from these two. If you've got any questions or you want to suggest ideas for topics or potential guests, then please feel free to reach out to me. Thanks for listening, and I'll be back next week.